DraftKings Sportsbook is not only my favorite sportsbook, but also America's top-rated sportsbook. Speaking of America, our top athletes are over in Tokyo competing for the gold. And DraftKings has a medal-worthy offer just for my listeners. Listen to this great offer. Place any pre-event wager of $1 to be eligible to cash $100 in free credits if America wins any medal this year. That's 100-to-1 odds on American athletes to stand on the podium and receive gold, silver, or bronze this week. 100-to-1 odds on an offer like this doesn't come around often, so sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook now to get in on all the action. I love using DraftKings Sportsbooks. It's really easy to navigate, has plenty of instructions for new bettors, and nearly limitless ways to get in on all the action. My friends and family have been loving DraftKings Sportsbook, and I know you will too. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits if America wins a medal. That's code THPN to turn $1 into $100 in free credits for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only, new customers only, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Want to go, pretty boy?
Two minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
And welcome to the Fourth Line Voice Podcast. My name is Darren. Thank you very much for tuning in. Episode 126 of the big show, some enforcer-based podcasting coming at you, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. How's everybody doing out there? Hopefully everybody had a great weekend, ready to attack the work week here. Welcome to part two of my interview with Colt King. Part one was very well received. Thank you everybody for listening and downloading it and retweeting it and sharing it and the comments. It was greatly appreciated. And I have no doubt you'll enjoy part two. Like I said, today we wrap up Colt's career, but we talk about his time in the Central League and of course over the pond in the UK and, his season in Sheffield and everything that went on there. I know there was some from UK fans were asking some questions and stuff. Well, Colt will answer all those questions today for you. And like I said, guys, I really appreciate everybody for coming back and tuning in. For the new listeners out there, I'm sure Colt brought in some new listeners. Welcome. Thank you. Like I said, I hope you really enjoyed this interview. I highly encourage you to go back and check out my back catalog, John Rasty, Steve McIntyre, Joey Tedarenko. For the UK fans, McMorrow, Nickerson, Zach Fitzgerald, Joe Grimaldi, who comes up here in this part too. I've had some great guests on, and I think you'd really go back. If you went back, I think you'd really enjoy the interviews. As I said earlier, normally, Wednesday is interview day, and then Sunday, is normally my solo rant episodes where, whatever happens to be topical for the day, I'll yell about. And other than that, I yell out at the clouds and talk about the good old days and all that sort of thing. But of course, with Colt, this interview is in such length, I figured I'd break it up into two parts. So, if this is your first time listening to the Fourth Line Voice, like the interview here, thank you and welcome. And I hope you enjoyed it, and, you'll put me in your rotation. Like I said, I know everyone and their dog has a podcast these days. So, if you come back and continue to, like I said, check out my back catalog and stay with me going forward, it would be, appreciated. But, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sort of, I'm rambling here as I'm sort of doing a bunch of intros and outros and everything. I hadn't, planned on breaking this interview up into two parts until I saw that it was over 3 hours. So, I'm kind of doing the intros all at the same night here. So, I'm a little ahead of myself. It's like I'm in a time warp, but, yeah, guys, like I said, I'm a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. There's over 50 shows in the network. All the NHL teams are represented. So whatever team you're a fan of, there's a show for you. So those guys are busy right now with the expansion and free agency and all that stuff. So give them a listen, as well as my boy Joe Lazito over at the Coliseum Chronicles is an Islander Enforcer-based podcast. And Joe does a great job. Had Ben Olsen on this week. For you UK fans, I know he was arch enemy number one over there, and he tells some great stories, and it's a great interview, and I think you guys would really enjoy it. And Joe's back catalog is tremendous. Mick Fakota, Eric Bolton, Aaron Asham, you know, on and on. And Joe knows his stuff. Been around for a long time, and yeah, they're just really great interviews. And when you're the big shot like Joe, I mean, dude's got merch. Forget the King of Queens. Yeah, no, Joe's the king of Staten Island. Not Staten Island, Long Island. Watch Staten Island. He's going to send me letter bombs now. He'll be upset about that one. But Joe's a man of the people. Definitely check it out. He's got merch, yoga pants, crop tops, capris, frisbees, coffee mugs, beanies, headbands, wristbands, pens, pencils. You name it, Joe's going to slap his face on it. But yeah, no, pick up a pair of leggings if you want to sit on Joe's face, go for it. But I don't even know what I'm saying. I'm getting giddy. It's been a long day here. But no, definitely check out Joe's show. He's a good guy and does great work. Of course, then Alec over at the Five for Fighting podcast is back in business. Again, great back catalog. Yablonski, Segroy, Rob Ray. He just put out his sort of his comeback episode, just where he explains what's going on and where his hiatus and all that. But I know he's got some guests lined up, so I'm really looking forward to those interviews. And Alec does a bang up job, and it's always good to have more enforcer content out there. So it's between the three of us, we're trying here, folks. We're trying. But other than that, guys, I'm not going to talk for very long. I think I'm losing my voice here. So how about we just get right into it? That's what you came for. So. Let's get after it. Here's part two with Colt King, and we'll talk to you guys on Wednesday. Thanks, everybody. You know, you're like I said, you're bouncing around, and it's off to the Central League. So, and 2 years in with the Rocky Mountain Rage of the Central Hockey League. How'd you end up in Colorado?
So I ended up in Colorado because Scott Ray ended up getting traded to our team in Port Huron. And actually, I met him at the All-Star game. I got selected for the All-Star team, which is the only other time I played in it. Well, I played in an All-Star game in Rapid City, but we hosted it, so it didn't count. But that was the only time I've been selected for an All-Star game, was in Port Huron. Anyway, so I met Razor at the All-Star game, and I thought he was hilarious. We hit it off right away. And after the season... I guess Tracy Eglin had contacted Razor about coming in and being with the player assistant and all that, just kind of obviously more or less help him recruit players. So he called me right away, and I'm like, yeah, I'll definitely go down there and play with you. Sounds great. So, again, CHL is whatever. It was all minor league. It was, to me, it was all the same, you know, like if you're doing well, they're going to call you up kind of thing. So, it didn't necessarily matter, you know. Tracy had all sorts of contacts and all that too, so I'm like, whatever, again, if I go down there and do well, then I might get a chance to get called up. So basically, Razor was the one that lured me in, and with Tracy giving me the talk, yeah, he's got all these contacts and all that. So sure, let's do it. And you're in Colorado, so why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, I mean, you know, and yeah, and I mean, it at the time, I mean, you guys had, you know, real strong team. Unfortunately, the Colorado Eagles were, you know, pretty stacked up at the time.
Yeah, very stacked up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you got had a bit of a rivalry against those guys, I'd imagine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, unfortunately. And we didn't have the caliber of toughness that they carried.
Yeah, no, that, yeah, well, I mean, of course, we'll, you know, well, let's, you know, and the Colorado Eagles, like I said, well, you know, you look at that roster and, you know, you got Fraser Flippick and Brett Thurston and Jay Burney and them, but of course, and of course, my boy Les Borsheim back on the on the back end. I mean, that's a tough team to go, and Ryan Tobler, I mean, that's a tough team to go against. Yeah, yeah, Pankowitz, Greg Pankowitz. Yeah.
So our first, so of course we play them in the preseason too, which is fucking ridiculous. Like we play them the most all season, and we're gonna, but obviously because we're 45 minutes away, it's easier and more cost effective, right? So we're going to just go down the road and play these guys. So we go down there, we play them, and of course, you know, like I don't have any Central League experience. You know, I'm only here. People are hearing about me for, you know, rumors or whatever the case may be, right? So, you know, I stretched close to the red line. I was never an on the red line guy. I was a close to the red line guy. And I just kind of, I'm just looking down there. I'm looking at people just because I don't know any of these guys either, right? So I'm like, Jesus, fuck, they're all huge. Like they, you know, they had obviously a couple of their skill guys, but I'm looking at everybody else, and like Jesus, they're all huge. I'm like, there's me, Jeff Hansen, Rob Chappell, and basically that was all that fought. Now I was the biggest out of the three of us, so I'm like, okay. So first guy that comes over to the red line is Greg Pankowitz, and he's got the C on, so I'm like, okay. I looked at his stats before the game, and guy gets 100 points a year or whatever, right? But he gets 300 penalty minutes a year. So I'm like, okay, this guy's either a maniac or he's actually super tough. So anyways, he skates over, and of course, he's got the tinted, like, blacked out visor. You can't see anything inside there. I'm like, holy fuck. He's got this big paddle of a blade. Like, yeah, I'll never forget this. It's super vivid in my mind. He's got this big paddle of a blade, which he only, like, tapes the center of it. And he's got big shoulder pads, so his body looks even bigger. And it just, he was wearing, I think he had the white skates on as well. And he skates over, he goes, hey, Cameron, are we going to have any problems tonight?
Oh, welcome to Colorado.
I said, well, I don't know. Still warm up. But I'm like, because I can't, what do I say? No, sir, or whatever, right? But that's exactly what I'm thinking. I'm like, not a fucking chance. I'm like, whatever you do, I'll do the opposite, is what I'm thinking, right? But of course, I got to say something back. I'm like, well, no, you know, it's whatever, right? Still warm up, so we'll see, kind of thing, right? And he didn't say much after that. I think he was just more or less like kind of breaking the ice because he was a deadly guy. He was a super deadly guy. I got to know him, playing against him 100 times. So, he's a super deadly guy. Man, he scored some unreal goals in his career too for his being as tough as he is.
Yeah. Do you have any run-ins with Borsheim?
No, we never fought. I want to say it almost happened probably every other shift we were on there with each other. But man, that guy just a menacing presence. Just ran guys over steady, and you're just like, man, can you just chill out a little bit? Yeah, but you're just like, well, because you just, then there's a whole list of guys you got to deal with, so you're just like, you get to pick and choose. He's just steady, just running guys over, and it's like, heads up, here comes the train.
Well, a name that appeared on your fight card here this year was Kyle Bruce. And I've noticed he's on your fight card a couple times. Did it just sort of happen, or did you guys have any heat with each other?
So when I fought him, I first fought him when he was in Wichita.
Yep.
I was in Rocky. He was in Wichita, I think.
Yep.
And actually, the game I fought him, I fought three times that game. And it was very odd, but yeah, I ended up fighting three times that game. I think he was the third one.
Yep.
But he's a player that everybody wants to fight. He has a weird, shitty, kind of chippy way of playing. He's not overly big, so it's not like guys would be scared of him either, you know what I mean? So, definitely fought a lot of guys, you know, obviously he's pretty tough, so but yeah, I don't know, there was never any real like heated bad blood or anything. I forget what the one guy's name is, but I think he was only like 5'9", the first guy I fought. The second guy, I forget his name. Obviously we played against each other 100 times. He was a very gritty player, but he asked me to fight, and I was kind of like set back and like, you know, like not sound like that, but I was like, just because of the sheer size difference, and he didn't fight much. I forget what his name is.
Well, it's like Stan Yasinishin or something.
Nope. The one before that.
Oh, Mike Vanajak or something. Vanjak.
Yeah. And I was just like, sure. One of those, like, yeah, you really want to? I'm like, you drop your gloves first so I know you're serious, and then, well, yeah, we can go. And it wasn't much. He pretty much tried to just push me and hold me up against the glass the whole time, and it didn't really turn out too much. The next fight was kind of one of those heated, like, hey, this guy's getting it, the action, the other guy. I forget what he did, but he did something stupid, and he deserved it. And the Bruce one was, I think it was this kind of, he was doing the same thing where he was playing a little bit chippy, and I'm just like, why not just round it off and get the hat trick tonight.
The one guy I wanted to ask you about, because he rolled into your team, he played 12 games, had 118 minutes, Justin Schmidt.
Man, Schmitty, beauty. Yeah, he's such a character, that guy. But yeah, he'd fight anybody. He'll fight anybody anytime. Anybody anytime. Unfortunately, he didn't win a ton, but the heart of a lion, that's for sure.
Yeah, I believe, we just started following each other on Facebook. I believe he was a rodeo clown last weekend, I believe. I think I saw him. Yeah, he's a big rodeo guy. Yeah, from Alberta. All right. The following year there, it is, 2009, 2010, you end up Rapid City. At the same time, did you start the year with the Rochester Americans though, or was that later on?
No, that was a call up midway through the year.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was just a call up, and that was, I think, the coach there, Joe Ferris. That was part of the agreement for me to go there, was that he needs to get me American League games. He needs to get me called up somehow. That was part of the agreement for me to go there. So they sent me up for two games. I went up to Rochester. It was in Abbotsford. It was a terrible experience. So we had just played the night before. They told me the day of the game. So they told me the day of my team's game that you're going up, you're getting called up, you got to leave tomorrow. I'm like, okay, cool. So I left at like 3:30 in the morning to go to fly to Abbotsford, BC. From where the fuck were we?
I don't know. I was leaving Rapid City, we'll say. Anyways, I had to take like 4 connecting flights, slept in an airport, took a cab for an hour and a half, changed inside the cab from my clothes into my suit, and showed up right as the guys were like having their pregame speech. So I had no time to warm up. I had like, I think I ate a sandwich from the gas station. It was just, I was on no sleep. So I get there and Rochester's on like a 7-game winning streak or something like that. And we go to Abbotsford and it's fucking, I think they beat us like 9-1 or something like that. It was bad. Anyways, I only got to play like 3 shifts and it was a -2. But I got put out there 1 shift and it was like 8-1 or something like that. And it was like, I don't know, maybe 7 minutes left in the 3rd period. And I was like, you know what? I'm not fighting. Fuck this. This is stupid. I'm not fighting right now. Because I could have. There was like, I think it was Jim Vandermeer. One of the Vandermeers was on the ice. There was a couple of the younger guys that were on the ice for Abbotsford that were also probably would have fought. But I was like, you know what? No, I'm not fighting. And I played the next game. I played 1 shift. I just sat there the whole game. It's like, get me the fuck out of here. This is terrible. So, but no one fought. There was no fights or anything like that. Maybe if someone else fought, then yeah, I would have, because if we're going to turn into that. But I'm like, I'm not going to be the one to fight if no one else is fighting. Like, Steve McIntyre was there. He's not fighting. If he's not fighting at this point, then why would I? Kind of thing. That was my mindset. So, the next game was a bit of a closer game, and yeah, I didn't end up playing much. So, that was my American League games.
Well, I was going to say, actually, I jumped ahead. At the start of that year, you were in Wilkes-Barre camp, were you not?
Yeah. That was okay. I did okay. I didn't do great. I did okay. I fought, what's his name?
Spencer. Tim Spencer.
Yeah, Spencer. Tim Spencer, yeah, that's right. I should have been more prepared to fight. I wasn't. But my jersey ripped when we were fighting. My jersey ripped right the whole side. So when we were, the way I load up when I was fighting, you know, I tend to use a bit of the other player's momentum by them holding on to my jersey. So when the jersey ripped, the grip got looser and I ended up falling and that was the end of it. But, he was a big guy.
Yeah, he was. Speaking of jerseys, I always have to ask, because I got jersey guys that always want me to ask this. Did you do anything to your jersey? Like, did you wear a goalie jersey, or did you get any different funky tie-downs, or do something with the sleeves or anything?
No, I would just shorten my tie-down, that's all. I didn't like a big tie-down.
No.
I wore super small shoulder pads, though. That was the one thing I did. I probably should have worn bigger ones, but I like those little Sherwood, little flappy, nothing to them.
Yeah.
Where you're completely free. So that was really, I just like to have my tie down so my tie down wouldn't come up over the back. I didn't put one on the front. I just like a shorter strap and smaller shoulder pads. When I wore my jersey every game, I'd already pull my jersey up like halfway onto my, like Ovechkin does, right? Like I pull up my jersey on top of my elbow pads. I'd always do that. So it was already kind of, you couldn't really grab my wrists because I already had the jersey all cinched up pretty much. So it wasn't, you know, nothing was dangling or flapping there.
Yeah. Well, like your second year in Rapid City, you guys had a hell of a team, and you battled it out, and you went all the way to the third round. How did you uh, you know, with, you know, Ryan Manet and Kevin Harvey and all those guys.
Oh yeah, we lost that game in overtime against Colorado. It was one of those fluke chances. I think there was like a minute 32 left of overtime, and their defenseman shot the puck wide, and you know that yellow Teflon piece that's on the boards.
Yep.
So it hit the top of that Teflon piece, and the puck kicked back out in such a way that it landed he picked it out of the air. What's his name? That little fucker from Colorado. Terrible memory. Anyways, he picked it out of the air and scored. Like, our goalie didn't stand a chance. And it was just a heartbreaker, because we would have beat them and beat Colorado. We knew we would have won for sure. But yeah, we had a good team. Harv's is a beaut. He's another tough guy who's pretty undersized. He would fight everybody. Big energy guy. Lots of energy. Guy had just a hell of a snapshot. Just same thing, far side over the goalie's shoulder every time. Yeah, Rapid City was good. We had a really good group of guys. Yeah, the year we won it, man, we were, that was one of those, everybody just bought in. Everybody was on the same page. Everybody did everything together. It was just a team. We golfed together. Everything was a team. And, it was a good group.
Yeah. Oh, I'm getting, I totally blew that. There's my, we're busy talking jerseys and I got mixed up with the Wilkes-Barre thing. Yeah. I thought I had my years reversed. Yeah. I totally blew over you winning the championship the first year there in Rapid City. Yeah.
Well, that's okay. I wasn't going to let it go by. I got to make a mention of that for sure.
Well, of course. Yeah. You know, yeah. But,
it was a good group. It was a really good group.
Yeah, I think I saw, did you guys, yeah, because I think I saw, was it a reunion picture?
Yeah. we had a 10-year reunion. That was awesome. Good to see everybody. No, it's crazy. It's like nothing changed. You know, we haven't seen each other. You know, a lot of us don't stay in contact steady. You know, everybody's kind of got their social media and everybody sees what each other's doing and all that. And, you know, you can, you know, still talk here or there, but, you know, not steady conversation, right? So when you got back together with them, it was honestly like we had literally seen each other last week.
Yeah. No, for sure. And it's, and I was just going to ask, like, as you've gone on at this point, like you said, you're sort of midway through your career, you know, you're in your mid-20s, and you've played in the East Coast, in the United League, and now into the Central. What are sort of the differences of the leagues? Or is it sort of just all, it's the minors?
Well, I mean, the affiliation is the biggest thing, right? The East Coast has a lot of affiliations with the American League teams, NHL teams, right? So there's more of the pipeline there. So therefore, it's younger, you know. There's generally more, there's younger players, you know, that still kind of obviously have that dream or have a tie. Maybe they're on a contract or something like that. So, the U-Haul, I don't regret going there. I don't probably shouldn't have, in the sense that maybe I should have stayed in the East Coast League or something like that. I don't know. Again, I didn't have an agent. I was doing everything on my own and trying to make the best decisions for me. So, again, I don't regret going, because if I didn't go there, I wouldn't have kind of taken the path I did in order to win that championship.
Yeah.
I mean, again, so, but U-Haul is, a bit more mature, we'll say. Not a lot of, didn't seem like there was a lot of that drive too for call-ups. It was more just the competitiveness and everybody still wanting to play and compete and all that, right, at a high level. The Central League was a good mix of kind of everything, where it had
You know, still had some affiliations. It has a lot of youth with a lot of skill and a lot of drive. But there was a lot of the seasoned players that have been, you know, in the league for 10 years already or whatever the case may be. So there was a lot of a lot of veterans in the league too. So there was a good mix of both. I really liked my time in the Central League. There was a lot of travel, but I mean, I got to go to a lot of places. That's where I won my championship. So, you know,
yeah, like, and then you know, well, I'm not asking you to for your fucking tax returns or anything, but like in terms of money, was it all sort of similar, or could you kind of negotiate a little more? Like, could things be worked in your favor? We'll put it that way. We don't have to throw any teams under the bus, but I mean, could they kind of grease you if they had to?
Oh yeah. And that's, I mean, the where I was still kind of, you know, like I was a sought after player.
Yeah.
So I generally had my pick of the litter, and I could, you know, generally negotiate into my favor too. So. You know, there was obviously still a bar that you know, that you couldn't surpass. It's financially, this is the way it works, obviously, right? So, but there was definitely a lot of ways around things.
Yeah. Okay, well, because this is, I'm leading somewhere with this as we go on here, but, so of course now, the following year is 2011, well, I screwed up, your championship year was 2010, and then we talked about 2010, 2011, and I was screwing up your years here, but, actually, yeah, I'm all over the place tonight. What about, it's too many Bud Lights, Colt, I'm telling you. Maybe I should lay off here or something. One of the names that came up, before we go over the pond here, before I have to ask you, and this is another guy, because I actually had him on my show, and it was a very controversial interview. But you had a few run-ins with him, and he was playing in Colorado, was Joe Grimaldi.
Yeah, that guy's a fucking goof, man. I don't know, you can air that for sure. Yeah, you know, he's just one of those guys that didn't have any respect. He didn't have any respect. I mean, there's plenty of proof on YouTube just to show that. But the guy's a goof. I would have had plenty more if he would have fought me more, but, yeah. He was somebody that if I could have put my hand through their head. That guy was a fucking goof, man.
Well, there we go. All right. Well, okay. Nothing more needs to be said after that. But
well, you know, there's all sorts of personalities in hockey. It's just the way it is, and that's just the way the game's played, and that's it's always going to be like that. But there's still a certain respect level you have to have for the people you're playing against and the people that are on your team. There's still, at the core of things, you're still a person. This is that hockey is just a game, right? And he was too much. He had no respect for anybody. He played like that. He would try to hurt people, and he was just, no, I had no respect for him.
Okay. Well, and another name before we leave the Central League, that I have to ask you about. You played in Fort Wayne. Kaylee Schrock. Schrocky Balboa.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was a bit of a showman. Yeah.
Well, you know what? And the I think the rink really certainly helps those guys perform and act and makes them feel like they're a lot tougher than what they are. Man, we had some battles in Fort Wayne. I think there's videos on YouTube of a couple of the brawls we had in Fort Wayne.
Yeah,
but that place is nuts, man. We would get bombarded, and it's like the fans would, they would just be like finger length, just we'd be out of their reach, or they'd be trying to get at us, and it was crazy. But yeah, Schrock, he was an energy guy. He got beat up a lot, but you know, he still got up and. He would do it all over again.
Yeah, well, and the thing about it, he's a local, too. He's from Fort Wayne. So he's like the hometown guy, right? So, oh, yeah. And he played there forever. He was a character. Fort Wayne, like what a hockey town, though. And, I mean, they love their tilts in Fort Wayne, man. Hell, they got Fletcher's and Bezos numbers retired, for God's sake, you know?
Yeah.
But, like when you talk about that, like, yeah, I mean, you know, Fort Wayne being crazy and stuff. What were some other crazy barns to play in?
Well, I remember my rookie year, like I was saying earlier, I was sat on the bench all the time. My rookie year in Windsor, they did a battery giveaway night. Well, no one took the batteries home, man. All the batteries ended up on our bench. And just taking batteries, you just feel one every once in a while. You off the shoulder or off the side of the helmet or something like that. Like, what the hell's going on here? There was all sorts of, tough places to play, buildings to be in and all that, but no, I'd say Fort Wayne was probably we played them in playoffs, and holy man, it was a show. It was just like the fans were trying to get at us. Like, I felt like I was in Slapshot. Like, it was crazy.
Now, did you like that? Like, did you like being the bad guy and on the road and all that? Like, some guys you talk to, they love that shit. Like, you know, were you into it? Or are you just like, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, whatever. Yes and no. Like, it was... for me, I just laugh about it.
Yeah.
It's funny, because, I mean, like, the fact that these people are this heated and spending so much of their time trying to worry about me and what I'm doing, and I'm literally just going to walk out from the dressing room to the bus, and they got one instance to say whatever they've been thinking about all night at me in that short period of time. I just kind of laugh about it. I was like, whatever, if you're going to get that mad, get that mad. And but actually in Fort Wayne, we got them going a little bit.
All your years and all those barns, you ever hit a fan? You ever pop somebody? Get away with one?
No.
No?
No, besides just squirting them with water or something like that. That's about it. No.
Damn, here I was hoping we'd get some dirt and knocking some guy out in Plymouth or something. Yeah.
There was definitely lots of arguments, and like I said, probably squirted water a few times, and again, I just laugh about it. Like, you know, it's funny to me. Like, I would never be, none of those fans would ever, unless they actually put their hands on me, then it'd be a different story. But I never actually would get mad because the fans are chirping me or telling me I suck or telling me whatever, my white skates are stupid or whatever the case may be. I would just, depending on the game and the situation, then I would generally try to chirp back. Because if I chirp back, then obviously they're getting a reaction, so they're gonna spend the rest of their night worrying about me. So it's kind of funny.
Oh, excellent. Well, here's the next port. 2011-2012. Colt King packs up and heads over the ocean, and you go to the UK, and you end up with the Sheffield Steelers. How did that all come about? How'd you end up in the UK?
Well, I've been getting calls for years to go to the UK. To me, it was, not to say that or put the league down by any means, but like for me, I finally said yes because I'd kind of given up on the NHL dream. I don't want to say given up on it because obviously I was still playing and I want to be the best I can, and if I can get a chance of playing in the NHL, of course I'm going to do whatever I can to do it. But again, like, I was kind of more thinking about the life side of things and the ability to be able to go over there for free, play hockey over in the UK and travel around and do all that stuff for free and see all, experience all that different stuff. And so for me, it was kind of just the point in my life where I was like, you know what? Yeah, let's go and do it. So, Sheffield was just unreal. I could have probably went to any one of the teams. Sheffield just seemed like it would be the best fit. It was awesome. I my wife and I talk about this all the time, but we say we should have went earlier or we should have stayed longer or whatever, but
Yeah, we wish we were there. We wish we were there more and longer, definitely. But we loved it. We loved it. We have nothing but good things to say about it.
Yeah, well, and like you guys had a hell of a team and everything else. When you got over there and you started actually playing, were you surprised by the league? Like, was it what you thought it was, or was it better than you thought, or worse than you thought? What did you think of the play?
Yeah, no, it was reminiscent of the U-Haul in a sense, where there was, you know, there was some younger guys, but most of the younger guys were the local players. The older veteran style players that were kind of the older guys that were there, I guess like me, were just there to kind of play and compete at a high level kind of thing, is the way I was kind of saw it. The level of hockey was good, but you know, and I don't want to take anything away from the British players, but like there's a big difference between me going in the corner to battle with a British, you know, one of the, because I mean, for one, I was just physically much bigger than they were, but I just, that's something I've been doing my whole life. I've been going in corners, I know the angles, I know to fake and all this stuff, right? Whereas, you know, they might be a little more hesitant, or, you know, like once they get in the corner, are they going to know how to use the boards and whatnot, right? So I kind of looked at it like, you know, there was a bit of an advantage for, you know, some of the younger guys. Like, definitely there's, you know, there was definitely a lot of skilled and talented local, you know, British players, UK, whatever, right? There's a lot of skilled Europeans over there, too. But for me, yeah, it was just kind of this. I want to go and compete at a high level and be able to enjoy my life while I'm doing it, right?
Yeah. What was your favorite place to play over there? I mean, you got Belfast, Nottingham, Cardiff, Coventry, you know, Brayhead, all that. What was your favorite rink to play in? Outside of Sheffield.
Well, they all had their own qualities, right? And they were all different, because that was an eye opener once I was there, because all the ice sizes were different.
Yeah, well, that was my next question. Yeah,
there is. I mean, you go to Scotland, and I forget which. It wasn't Glasgow. It wasn't Edinburgh. It was, but anyways, one of the rinks up in that we played in Scotland, there was literally 2x4s on the top of the board, and it was chainmail, it was fencing all along the back, all the backstopper. I was like, what the fuck have I gotten myself into?
What am I, back at Thunder Bay at the elementary school? Yeah,
pretty much, right? But again, though, like, there was definitely a lot, you know, a lot more skilled players than me. There was definitely a lot of talent, but it wasn't a hole. You know what I mean? I don't know. Because I don't want to shoot down the league. I don't want, because I mean, again, it's a very competitive league. There's a lot of good players and all that, right? So
yeah. What, like, the guy, like, I've had a bunch of different guys that have played over there and stuff, and they're saying all this thing you're saying, and it's not like you're saying anything different, but I know one of the big issues they had was with the refereeing.
Oh, yes. Yes. You know, and so playing in Sheffield, and at the time it might be different now, so playing in Sheffield, our owner owns, like, a manufacturing company, like a clothing manufacturing company, whatever, right? They made all sorts of stuff. So anyways, they made our jerseys and socks. But the ref, one of the three refs that were in the league, I forget his name. He was a goof. But he had a company too that made, jerseys for all the other, so there was a conflict of interest right off the hop.
You know,
like there's a reason right there for you to call penalties against somebody else or whatever, right? So I don't know, the professionalism wasn't there. That's a good thing that I should have pointed. I'm glad you mentioned the refs, but yes, there's a level of professionalism that they don't carry. Very spiteful, they don't know how to read the flow of a game. I don't know. They were bad, though.
But, yeah, well, and like you said, yeah, you're in a few tilts over there. Of course, you run into your old boy Kyle Bruce over there, and but you Chris Frank and Sladek and them. One of the fights I was watching online, I think it was just a couple of days ago, was with Jurnik, Ryan Jurnik. You have his like the jersey over the head, and it's like you're sort of looking at the refs, like, are you coming in here, like. And then he kind of kept fighting, or, like, what was going on there?
Yeah, so, who else did I fight? I fought someone else right before that where the same thing happened, where, like, the jersey just came right up over their head, and I literally could have just sat there and just teed off on them. But generally, the refs would jump in and break that up at that time to protect the player, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, instead, in the heat of the battle, you're still kind of going at it. And I'm just like, no, like, I can't keep doing this. This guy's completely defenseless. And, I mean, obviously, it's a tactic you use when you're fighting anyway, so you can get the upper hand, right? So I ended up fighting Jurnik. He was a tough guy, too. Like, I think he fought anybody and everybody that was tough in that league that year. But same sort of thing that we were going at it, and I had his jersey up and over his head, and I could have just sat there and just hammered on him. But I'm like, man, like, it's literally unfair. And I'm thinking of the size difference too. So, I mean, he was a smaller guy. I think he was only like 5'10" maybe. And, so I did look at the refs like, man, like, this is a good time for you to probably jump in here. But they didn't jump in there. So then Jurnik starts throwing punches again. I'm like, okay, well, then you guys aren't going to jump in. And then, I don't know if you've seen the Sladek fight on YouTube.
Yes.
But the Sladek fight is the same thing. Exact same thing where I get his jersey over his head and the refs don't jump in. And then I was like, well, you guys are fucking brutal. You're not going to jump in. And I hit him with an uppercut and he drops. And I just skate away. I'm just like, this is, that's horrible. Like, it's horrible. You should have jumped in. The guy clearly just, do I just let him go and skate away? No, you don't just let him go and skate away, because what if then if he starts coming and still throwing punches at me, right? So, you know, at the end of the day, you're still trying to protect yourself.
Yeah, well, it's a fist fight.
You don't want to hurt anybody. Yeah, but, right? Yeah, ultimately, it's a fist fight. Right,
yeah,
exactly.
You know, shit's happening, and you're pumped up and whatever, and it's like, well, he's trying to get me, so I'm going to get him before he gets me, but
exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, really? Yeah. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I mean, you know, that's what I always say to these people. I mean, you can flower church it up all you want. At the end of the day, it's two dudes throwing hands. I mean...
Shit
happens. So,
but that's what I mean, and it just happened. Just like it did happen in succession like that, where it was like three fights in a row where I literally could have just fed these guys their lunch. But I'm like, no, I can't do that because they're completely defenseless. Like they, you know, I got my one or two in. That should be enough. The ref should have jumped in.
Yeah,
but instead they don't.
Yeah,
whatever. Whatever.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, yeah, like I said, that's been sort of the common theme complaint with a lot of the guys is the player safety department and refereeing. They were just like, it's brutal, you know, and
yeah.
I'm trying to think, was it Nickerson? Somebody on my show kind of really went off on about it. Yeah. And about how they're going to have to really clean it up and stuff like that. But anyway.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, it's whatever. The refs, it's always their fault, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. But but overall, though, like you said, you guys had a hell of a team, and you said your wife and yourself really enjoyed Sheffield and everything else. But of course, then the question comes up that I was supposed to, all the UK listeners out there, I mean, and again, you're a fan favorite still over there, because I got a lot of requests to get you on the show. But one of the big questions was, right when the playoffs are starting, you're gone. You left. Like, what happened? Why did you leave Sheffield, and what happened?
Yeah, you know, it was actually a bit of a surprise to me too. So I don't know exactly the reason. Ryan Finnerty was the coach. But he was, he's no coach. He's definitely no coach. And he's, I don't know. I honestly don't know the reason why he let me go. You can only speculate. Maybe I did something wrong, whatever. I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know. I literally came in to go to the, I was late for the morning skate. I was late for the morning skate, but that's definitely not a reason to get rid of one of your better players. So I was late for the morning skate after our little banquet thing that we did. And, I came in and the assistant coach is like, hey, can I talk to you? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. So I go over there and talk to him. He goes, Finner wanted me to let you know that we're going to release you and that we're going to let you go. And I just kind of sitting there. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, we're releasing you. I said, are you kidding? And he's like, yeah. And you could tell he's just, is that the assistant coach was Neil Abel, and he's a Scottish guy. And him and I had a really good relationship. We would always laugh and joke. The guy was strong as an ox. We were having a couple pints in the bar one night and trying to get him to arm wrestle a bunch of the boys and finally get him to arm wrestle. And there was like probably about 10 of us that arm wrestled him, and not one of us could even budge his arm, you know. And like, again, like I'm a bigger guy and, you know, I would consider myself decently strong, and I couldn't even budge him. Anyways, we had a good relationship. He was a good guy. And so he's breaking the news to me, and you can kind of tell that he's just like, this is definitely not my decision. I'm just being told to do this and all that stuff. So Finner didn't even show his face. He didn't even come to the rink that day. So I was like, okay.
Well, and he's also a player coach, right?
Exactly. He's player coach, and he puts himself on the number one power play unit to quarterback the power play. We got Jeff Legui, who's got 100 points every year for the last 7 years, but instead Finner is going to run the power play and control the puck. Anyways, guy was brutal.
But like, did you and him not get along all year? Like, was this like,
no.
Was this completely out of the blue? Like,
well, no, like I, well, yeah, I'd say it was definitely out of the blue. I had questioned a few things, along the way. Some of his coaching decisions for sure, because I mean, again, he's putting himself out in situations he doesn't need to be in, and then once he gets off the ice, there's no one to like run anything and pick and choose because he's out there taking. Anyways, the guy was brutal, but we never came to an argument. We didn't blow up at each other. You know, like I said, I might have thrown a few jabs about the way things were going in a game or two, but, you know, again, nothing where we're getting heated arguments or anything like that. So, no, I was completely caught off guard when it happened.
Well, yeah, because it seems so bizarre. I mean, you're almost the point-of-game guy. You're leading the team in penalty minutes. You're winning all your fights. What's your record? You're 41-11. You know, behind Belfast, that you two teams are running away with it, and it's like right almost as playoffs are here. It's like, yeah, you're done. Like what?
Yeah. I couldn't believe it. My wife couldn't believe it. She's like, she thought it was a joke. She's like, what are you talking about? It's like, no, seriously, I'm on my way home from the rink right now. She's like, oh my God, what are we going to do? Because we're like, well, we weren't obviously planning on having to leave. So business is a bit sketchy over there. So we were a bit worried about how things were going to play out now that they released me. But the owner was actually really stand up about it. He helped us out in every way they could. And, you know, we ended up spending two 2.5 weeks there traveling around after they released us. I was like, why not? Let's take full advantage. We're here, so let's just stay and travel around and take the train around and go see a few things. So stayed for a couple weeks and then, yeah, came back.
But so you, well, so everything they promised you, you got anyway, like in terms of your money and everything, no problems?
Oh, yeah. No, I have, yeah, no, I can't. Yeah, I have nothing in bad. Like I said, the owner really liked me. I bet you, the owner, he was, so I went back and I was shooting them down earlier, but I didn't, again, like I wasn't trying to shoot down any of the British players or anything like that, because I, you know, I, some of the British players I played with were some of the funniest guys and worked harder. Anyways, like, again, like I didn't want to sound like I was trying to trick them. But I went back for Jason Hewitt testimonial. So what they do is, if you play, it's a soccer thing, a football thing. So if you play for a certain amount of teams or a certain amount of team for so long, they do this testimonial match where it's like a celebration and, you know, it's about your career and all that. And, you know, former players come and all this stuff, and it's a whole ordeal. We don't do anything like that over here. So Huey asked me to come back because, again, like you said, you know, the fans, they really liked me. You know, he was a good friend of mine. Our wives are good friends, and you know, we went to Vegas together and all this stuff. So like we've stayed friends this whole time. So he asked us to come back. So like, yeah, absolutely, we'll come back. And so we'll come back, and then so the owner paid for our flights and all this stuff, and I believe it was. But anyways, we got there, and you know, he said, you know, like I, you know, I'm sorry, it was this was his decision, and I, you know, we wish you would have stayed around here and stuff like that. So they were pretty stand up about it and all that. So I have nothing bad to say about the organization. Just, you know, they had the wrong coach at the wrong time. That's all that boiled down to.
There we go. Well, so you go, you head back home, and then the following season, you end up, you know, your final 2 years of your career are back in the Central League with the Missouri Mavericks. But before that, did you have any other contact with any other UK teams about going back there, or was once enough?
So before you skip ahead, I don't know if the fans will let you live it down if you don't talk to me about the Lapine fight.
Okay. All right. I didn't know I was supposed to ask about the. Nobody told me about, what happened. Hey, you UK fans out there, you didn't bring this up to me. Okay.
Oh really? That surprises me. Because that was basically the fans' introduction to me over there, and it just you know, Sheffield and Nottingham, they're 45 minutes down the road from each other. Just, they're the number one rivalry. Every time they play each other, the barns are filled. There's drums playing, the music. It's a game seven game every time you play them. So, anyways, they had been beating us. the first time we played them at the beginning of the season, they were giving it to us pretty good. I think it would have been like 5-2 or something like that in the second period, and so they had. Gilliam, I think how you pronounce that, could be pronounced.
Yeah.
Lapine. And I guess he's the reigning heavyweight. He's been beating everybody up and beating everybody up in Sheffield the last couple of years or whatever, right? So so I challenged him, just one of those, hey, here's, you know, this is what you guys kind of were expecting from me, maybe. This is what I can bring, kind of thing. You guys are obviously kicking the shit out of us right now. I'm going to have to try to make a statement, one of those things. And so we ended up fighting, and I ended up getting the better of him. And from that point on, I think that's the only reason why the fans in the UK like me, was because of that fight. Well, especially in Sheffield. But if it wasn't for that fight, I don't know if I would have the
following support, that you do?
The support I do, if it wasn't for that fight. So that's why I'm a bit surprised that they didn't want you to ask me about that. That's funny.
Well, hey, Searson, Paul, I know you two jokers are listening. You're making me look like a chump over here. I'm not as informed as I thought I was. Here, I thought I was playing it cool. But, yeah, you're leaving me out to dry, boys. But yeah, so did you have any other contact about going back to the UK?
I did, but I pretty much brushed it off.
Been there, done that.
You know, and just the way things ended, it left a sour taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
Again, I love the people in Sheffield. I loved being over there. You know, I have nothing bad to say about the hockey or anything like that. But yeah, it was a bit of a sour taste in my mouth the way things ended there, and I just didn't want to go back over there because there really wasn't anywhere else I wanted to play. Yeah, I probably would have played in Nottingham, but I didn't want to play in Nottingham because, like you said earlier about the fans saying "fuck you" to you, because I'm playing for the Panthers. All the Sheffield fans want to split my throat because I'm playing for the enemy. You know, and probably Belfast too, but same thing. I'm just kind of like, you know what? I'm just going to stay over here. I'm going to stay over here and I'm going to keep trying. If I can, you know, if I get a chance, then I'll take it, but I'm going to have a better chance playing over here. So.
Yeah. Well, this, so, I mean, you come back home and, you know, back to the Central League and, well, actually before, completely off topic, but in terms of, you know, kind of in that mid-2000s, I know you probably were offered, but did any of the LNAH teams get a hold of you and ask you to come to Quebec? How many of those phone calls did you get?
Daddy getting phone calls. Always. And I think I was it was like a year or two after I'd been retired, I was still getting phone calls.
Did you think about it at all?
No. Not for a second.
No.
Not for a second, no.
Man, you would have been huge. No. They would have loved you there, man.
Yeah, you know, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
No, I couldn't do it.
Just, you know, like, you know, guys like John Morassi. I would inevitably have to fight a guy like that, like Steve Bossy or something like that, like the Thoreau, like you're talking, like you're mentioning. I don't want to fight guys like that.
Yeah.
Especially at where I was in my life and my, you know, no way. And they weren't offering much money, like, well, as much money as what I would have wanted. And, you know, after you're seeing, you know, on the boys on the bus and all these other, hearing all these other stories, I'm like, not a chance. not a chance.
Yeah, it's crazy times, man, crazy times. But how'd you end up in Missouri?
I had some friends play there. A couple of my buddies had played there. Same sort of thing. They were going to have a good team. I knew a bunch of the guys that from playing against that were there. So I'm like, wow, Jesus, if these guys are going there and already there, then yeah, we're going to have a good team. Heard it was an unreal place to play. You know, in the minor leagues, you know, living where you live and how they treat you is a big thing. So, you know, that's generally where I would steer towards. So, I can't remember if there was any one or anything in particular other than just teams calling me and me weighing the pros and cons and saying, you know what, this will be the best fit for us. So, yeah, I love Missouri. It was a great place to play too. You know what? There's nowhere that I played that I would say I didn't like. You know, I might not have liked the coach in Sheffield or whatever, but I loved playing in Sheffield. Like I said, I would have played longer if I would have went earlier, or if circumstances would have ended differently, then I probably would have stayed longer. But they ended the way they did, and I had a bad taste in my mouth, and I said, "Fuck that! I'm just going to stay here." And you know, if I can get something in the next couple of years, then great. If not, then I'll have to seriously consider what my future looks like. So,
yeah. Well, like you said, you get to Missouri, and one of your teammates, of course, was a former guest on this show, Riley Emerson, Big Riley. And so I sent him a text, and I said, hey, I'm having Colt King on the show. You know, you got any stories or, you know, give me some dirt, man. I had to bring some dirt up. I'm going to hit it. It's going to be like Jerry Springer. I'm going to hit him with some dirt when he doesn't know it. And
okay. What do you got?
Nothing. Nothing. He goes, oh, greatest guy. Great family, man. Love him. You know, I'm like, oh, well, thanks. Yeah, nothing. I got nothing. So, you know.
He's, man, that guy's something else, man. He, you know what? I would say the exact same thing about him. He is such a nice, kind human being. He is just a genuine good person, that guy.
Yep.
His wife Jennifer, amazing. They're incredible. The kids are great, but we actually, when we went back for that testimonial for Huey a few years ago, he was player coach in Edinburgh.
Yep.
So we actually went up to Edinburgh and seen him and spent a couple of days with him. We'd love to be able to go out there and see them out west, and obviously with the way the world is right now, that's not possible, or more possible, but has been the last couple of years. But it was fun playing with them. I really enjoyed my time with them. It was definitely nice having him on the team, that's for sure.
Well, that's a large human. Yeah.
Oh man, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he's a big body, and he's just big and strong, and holy shit, like in preseason he hit me one time, and it was just nothing but just a rub out finishing your check, and it was nothing. He still knocked the wind out of me. Holy fuck, this guy's a monster.
Yeah, well, yeah, and like I said, I've had him on twice now, and he's a really good interview. He told some funny shit, and he's quite the character for sure. But
he's another one of those guys that if you didn't know he ever played hockey, you probably would never think he's ever been in a fight. He's just such a nice person.
Yeah. Yeah, and like you said, yeah, he's definitely in a few, that's for sure. yeah, but your final season of pro hockey, I mean, you guys had a heck of a regular season. You know, 44-20, you're at the top of the league, and unfortunately, you got eliminated in the first round.
Yeah, well, that was another tough one. Yeah, playoffs, anything can happen,
yep.
Kind of thing, right?
And yep.
Our coach, he was a really nice guy, Scott Hillman. He was a really nice guy, but I think it was kind of a negative for a coach, you know, because I don't know why we lost, and I'm not blaming him for definitely us losing. But me personally, the way I looked at it was that he struggled making those tough decisions and being hard on guys in those tough times. And I think, you know, things maybe would have been different if he could have been harder on people and, you know, maybe sat people down when they needed to be sat down or whatever the case may be. I don't know. But I certainly think that, yeah, he was just too nice. It was too nice, and that we needed a harder coach. I think the coach that probably got the most out of me was probably Tracy Eglin in Rocky Mountain. He was a good guy. He was a tough read, but he was the one thing you knew what you were getting was honesty, right?
Yeah.
And you know he had expectations too, and yeah, he was a good coach to play for.
Yeah, well, and that's all you want, right? I mean, as long as they're telling it to your face and it's honest, I mean, you can't ask for more than that. I mean,
well, no, it's absolutely not. Yeah, absolutely not. But he had carried a presence about him. Guys respected him, and yeah, he was. We should have done better in Rocky, but yeah, that was another one of those. That's playoff time.
Yeah, well, we'll wrap up. I just got a couple more couple tilts to ask you about because they were a couple beauties and they're on YouTube and I was watching them. You had a real good fight that last year with Justin Sawyer, and that's a big dude, man.
Yeah, he was somebody that kind of, I don't want to say I was ducking, but, you know, again, like, you know, I just saw myself as more of a player than just strictly fighting all the time. So there wasn't necessarily ever really a time where I said to myself, okay, I need to fight him, except for when I fought him in when he was in Raw. He was in Rapid City. So it was in Rapid City, and I just had to do it, and yeah, it was...
Was that, I was going to ask you, was that sort of like a statement fight?
No, it was... So, I had fought Grunky the night before, and I gave it to him pretty good. And his Grunky's tooth went through my left, my left middle knuckle, and at the time I didn't know, but anyways, he severed my tendon, and from his tooth, I was starting to get a staph infection. So my left hand was fucked. So I obviously played that game, and I played, and Sawyer obviously was looking for a bit of retribution and just timing of the game and all that. He had hit me and did something earlier where it rattled me a little bit. So I was already a bit stirred up, and so I was like, "Yeah, let's go. We're in my old stomping grounds. This is where I won the championship." They boo me now, but you know what? I'm going to show them what they're missing, kind of thing, right? And yeah, we had a good fight, but I was kind of, and I'm not making excuses, but I was a little one-handed, and yeah, you know, he's a big guy. Yeah, it was a good fight, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, then another one, and he's a bit of a care. Amesbury, Daniel Amesbury.
Oh, yeah, Danny, radio. Yeah, he was, well, the tough one, too, is that on the YouTube video, the audio, they got the player in there, that's Gio Flaminio, the guy I played with. I won the championship, so it's tough when I watch that, when I listen to the video, because he's still a good buddy of mine, and I can hear him cheering for Sawyer in that one. I'm like, ah, fuck, this still burns me a little bit, but, you know.
Come on, Gio.
He's supporting his teammate. You got to do that, man.
Yeah. Yep. Well, do you remember who your last fight was with in your career?
No, I can't offhand, no.
Garrett Klotz.
Oh, yeah, it was, eh? Oh, yeah. Yep.
That's a big kid. Yeah. he played junior here in Saskatoon. So, yeah, I was watching that video. And, yeah, that was Colt King's final career fight against Garrett Klotz.
I actually almost fought him in the hallway after we got sent off the ice, so that would have been the last one. But yeah, no, he runs around a lot. But I mean, that's the way he has to play. Whatever, that's the way he's effective. You know, whatever it is, what it is. And he had ran over my winger, who's just a smaller guy. And no, I wasn't having it. So I went over to go and hit him, but he actually fucking popped me first before I got him. And he sat me down. I was like, "Oh, that's not a good start." So then I left my gloves on the ice when I was getting up, and we just went straight at it. No buck. We didn't even bother taking our buckets off. We just started throwing right away. Yeah, it was that was one of those heated, we're gonna try to hurt each other kind of. And so it just carried on into the hallway in between the dressing room. Security guards were in between us. There's usually cops at the game, right? They were called. They came down. Oh, it was a big melee.
Well, there you go. Well, you went out with a bang anyway. Yeah, the final fight, you're punching with bad intentions and fighting it all, trying to get in the halls. And at that point, you know, when the season's over there and, you know, and you wrap it up, you know, at this point, you're 30 years old. Did you know that was it? Or did... Enough was enough.
Yeah, no, I already knew. When I went to Missouri, I told my wife, I'm like, you know, whatever, I'll play to 10 years,
anything happens, then something happens. If not, then at the 10-year mark, then I'll see. I'll see what's going on. But, you know, I just kind of, I wanted to start planning for the future. I wanted to start doing, you know, more things that I want to do and, you know, not have, you know, just basically start my life again, right? Start a new chapter. So,
yep.
So yeah, you know, I played the 10 years and, you know, I never got the call up again or anything like that. So at the end of the season, that was it. I knew it was going to end and, you know, well, unfortunately we ended in the first round again, not the way I wanted to go out, but that's hockey.
Well, a hell of a career, man. Yeah. You had a hell of a run and, yeah, 10 years. I mean, hey, you got to do something that the majority, 99% of the world doesn't get to do, right? That you got to play pro hockey and got drafted and was in an NHL camp and played some preseason. And, yeah, man, and then 10 years pro and saw the world. And, yeah, it's pretty cool. So what's Colt King up to these days?
Well, I'm trying to get a sponsorship for my fishing guiding service, but that's not really working out. It's working out as good as my NHL career has.
Well, I know you're a big fisherman there. Yeah. I was saying we gotta get you versus Bob Azumi on pay-per-view.
I know I've tried a few different things actually since I retired from hockey. I was an environmental technician. I worked at a mine just outside of Thunder Bay here, and it was pretty neat. I got to spend a lot of time out in the bush, and then that's where I love to be. So it was an easy, it was a no-brainer to take the job, and it was pretty cool because I got to get my black bear safety course, which allowed me to trap and relocate bears. So I was doing that for a couple of years, and that was a bit of a neat experience. But when I was doing that, I had to be away from home. I was doing like a one week out rotation. So I kind of, you know, I just from all the travel and hockey and all that, I just kind of, you know what, I don't want to do that anymore. So I got a job at a craft mill in town, a paper/craft mill in town. I did that for a couple of years and then ran into a bad manager/bad coach. And I said, fuck you, I'm out of here. So I'm actually now working for Pepsi. I got a job for Pepsi in town. And I just got my A to Z driver's license. So I'm going to be driving a big rig and delivering pop.
There you go.
In the near future here.
I think Pepsi ain't going out of business. So I think you'll have that job for as long as you want it. So, yeah.
That's for sure. Yeah.
I don't know. I think a GoPro camera and Colt King bear hunter. That's a reality show waiting to happen. I'm thinking it right now.
Jesus. Yeah. Bear hand, bear hunter.
I don't know. All the bush, the GoPro and all the, the nightlight and,
Well, you know, like the trapping the bears and all that sounds fun, but I'm, you know what, man, I love animals. I'm way too soft. I'm actually, I'm just getting into hunting. Actually, all my buddies do it and whatnot. And, you know, where I live up here in Thunder Bay, I mean, we're surrounded by bush and nature and all that. So, you know, I thought, you know, why not try it? So the actual hunting side of things is super fun. But the actual shooting and all that, no, I pretty much just go for the hike and go and be around the boys for the weekend.
Yeah, I was kind of with you. I was going to say, shooting the guns is the one thing, but I don't know, putting one between Bambi's eyes just never seemed to really, do it for me. I don't know. I just like, yeah, I don't think I get it. I mean, I understand. I'm not anti-hunting or anything. I get it, but it's just it's not something I could do. I don't think. Yeah.
No, I couldn't be the one to pull the trigger. I'll definitely do everything I can to help.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do it. No, I was definitely going to eat the meat, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, that's a whole other story. We're getting deer jerky. I got no problem with that. Yeah.
Yeah, right on, yeah.
Well, there we go, man. There's the story and career of Colt King. And I know we've talked about this for a while, setting this up, and I know you're a busy dude, and you know you like to get out there on the weekends and stuff. So I really appreciate you taking the time to do this today. And I know a lot of people are really looking forward to hearing this. So I know I've kept you on the phone. We've been on here a long time, and it's really late there. So I'll let you go. But thank you once again for coming on. I really appreciate it.
No, yeah, it's my pleasure. Absolutely, thank you for having me on. It was great. It was actually fun to reminisce about the career. I don't talk about it that much. Not that I don't talk about it that much, but you know, like it's nice to kind of bring up things I've never thought of. I haven't thought about in years and all that. So, yeah, no, thanks for having me on. It was fun. Appreciate it.
Excellent. All right, man. Well, like I said, it's late there, so I'll let you go. But thank you again.
Appreciate it. Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Cole. Appreciate it. Have a good night, man.
All right, you too. Cheers.
And you people that don't like fighting, how many of you did you walk out and get a coffee while that was on?